Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Economist and author of Money, David McWilliams, good morning.
Brendan, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. David, it's been some week and we thought you might be able to give us some insight into what the hell is going on. Did you see J.D. Vance speaking in Munich yesterday? So the biggest threat to European democracy is from within. He says Europe is running in fear from its own voters, refusing to address migration. What were your thoughts watching that?
Look, this is the biggest change politically, strategically, economically in world affairs that I have seen in a week for at least 30 years. This is monumental. So what Vance is basically saying is that he sees the European Union as the enemy. He sees Zelensky as the opposition. And what he's basically saying is the United States is moving into a different orbit. Now, that has profound ramifications for the world because it means that in a sense, Brendan, what we became used to, particularly after the fall of the Berlin Wall, particularly after the end of the Cold War, particularly after the notion that America would always defend Europe, that we would have open and free trade with the United States, that our relations would be always more cozy with America, and that Russia and China were the enemy, has now been flipped on its head. Not just Vance speaking on Friday, but also Trump. But I'll just give you a fascinating thing. The Munich conference, for a long, long time, was very much sort of strategists and political and military wonks sitting around discussing the world. But the last person who made a consequential speech like Vance's was in 2007 at that conference, at exactly the same podium, and it was Vladimir Putin. And Putin came up. And if people who know Russia will remember, for the first about 10 years of Putin's reign, from about 1999 on, people thought, oh, Putin is a guy we can do business with. He's one of us. He's going to be pro-Western. And he came up in 2007 and made a speech that they were all expecting to be sort of sweetness and light, and we're all basically in one large family. And he said, no, Russia has recovered from the chaos of the Yeltsin years. It has recovered from the degenerate decade after the end of communism. And now Russia wants to establish its own interests. Russia will not allow NATO to expand. Russia has a sphere of influence and a sphere of competence. And that is what we are going to do. So in the same way as Putin, more or less in 2007, at exactly the same podium, set out what he was going to do, which culminated in the war, which is now coming up to its fourth anniversary. Vance is setting out his stall. And what he is saying is that the America of MAGA is on a collision course with its oldest and most reliable ally, the European Union. And that changes the world completely.
Okay, and do you think, okay, a couple of questions out of that. So one is, you know, people talk about this is just 4 years. Could this be a permanent redrawing of the world order? And secondly, what you're saying there, so they're turning on their own allies. So is this redrawing of the world order now also that Trump and America is now more in bed with Russia than it is with its traditional allies? So the poles are shifting completely.
It's extraordinary stuff. The first thing we know is that Russia has won the long game. So we know that when the war started, the Russian tactic was we will basically sit this out. We will lose equipment and men on the battlefield, but we will wait. Eventually, that transatlantic alliance between the Europeans and the Americans will crack. It's now cracked. So Russia has won the war in its own head, but it's also won the long game. And Trump said the other day, and Vance reconfirmed that yesterday, that NATO will not expand into Ukraine, one of Putin's number one demands. Also, the entire Russian strategy has been to fracture the alliance between Europe and America. I think initially they probably thought that Germany would balk first because of the energy imports and Germany would back down. In fact, what has happened is the MAGA movement has emerged or re-emerged in America, and now the transatlantic alliance, upon which almost all diplomacy has been based for decades is now totally shattered. And of course, the Russian economy, which was, remember, Brendan, supposed to collapse under the pressure of sanctions, has not collapsed. And the Russia that has emerged now, and this is what I think, speaking to Russian friends of mine, is the Russia that has emerged now after the war is very different to the Russia that went into the war. And by that, they mean the liberal elite, the middle class, the cosmopolitans, the people that Putin refers to as the degenerates, they're all gone. And in their place now is a Russia with two power bases, the Orthodox Church and the state. So it's very imperial, it's very czarist, and it's a totally different creature that we are dealing with. And as you said,
and is no longer isolated now after this week, no longer isolated from the rest of the world.
Absolutely, because what Trump has done, and of course, the big loser here is Ukraine has been stabbed in the back. So, you know, people talk about parallels between the Munich conference, you know, when Chamberlain and Hitler sat down and redrew the borders of the Czechoslovakia without the Czechs even being present. That's exactly what happened last Thursday. Trump and Putin sat down or went on a call without the Ukrainians even being present, and they said, look, let's set out the parameters of these negotiations and we will deliver a coup de grace onto the Ukrainians. And of course, the last 24 hours has all about the Ukrainians and the Europeans trying to get back onto the table. But, you know, We know that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu, and Ukraine is on the menu.
And listen, we can tend to be a bit removed from all this as well, although I suspect listening to you now, people are waking up a bit to it. But look, you know Eastern Europe well. I think you were there shortly after the collapse of the Soviet Union, travelling around as well.
Yeah,
give us a sense of how visceral this is for them, this idea of capitulating to Putin and Putin winning. They don't trust him that he won't go again, do they, whether in Ukraine or elsewhere? And they have lived through Russia as this type of animal, haven't they?
Look, you talk to any Pole, any Slovak, particularly any from the Baltic states, even you sit around, have a drink with them very, very quickly, you will get on to the issue of the fear and the appreciation of Russian strength, the appreciation of the willingness of the Russians to basically what they would regard as rule the backyard, what they call the near abroad. The Russians have this notion of the near abroad, which is largely in their heads every Slavic country, not just Baltics or Lithuania, Ukraine, every Slavic country. So there is definitely a deep cleavage now in the European Union between those of us on the extreme west of the European Union, who ironically are much more exposed economically to this fracture than those on the east. On the east, they want a European army. They want it quick. They want it fast. And of course, one other thing that has come up after the Ukraine, it's not the Ukraine capitulation, it's the Ukrainians have been stabbed in the back. It's that idea. Do you remember the start of the war? There was this idea that, oh, well, the Russian army has got this old equipment and we've got this new wham, bam, thank you, man, you know, high-tech stuff, and we'll destroy them with our high-tech stuff. Now, the Russians have just come back and said, look, you threw everything at us and we're still here. And that's a massive, massive source of anxiety if you're in Eastern Europe.
Okay. And then to be parochial about it, what does all this mean for us in Ireland?
This is huge for us. This is huge for us because remember I was saying there was kind of a 40-year period back to the Cold War where we kind of understood how the world worked, which is basically Europe and America moved in tandem. And against that background, Ireland played a very clever game, which was we became that little bit of America in Europe, the multinationals, the cultural connection, all that stuff. Right now, in the United States, we know the first MAGA move is on diplomacy. The second one is in April, which is not that far away. They are going to announce what they are going to do, tariffs, sanctions, etc. And what they're obsessed with, Brendan, is this idea. And it doesn't matter if economics and academic economics doesn't think it's right, okay? They're obsessed with the idea of a trade surplus. So the countries with the biggest trade surplus with the United States are their enemies and their targets because they believe a trade surplus is unfair for them because that country is selling more into the United States and the Americans are buying from them. I'll just give you a figure. Ireland has the largest trade surplus with America in the world per head of population. We have a trade surplus with the United States, which runs at about 6,000 euros per head per year. Now, I'll give you the same figure for China. The Chinese trade surplus of the United States, although bigger, because their population is so much bigger, runs at about 210 euros. So we have a trade surplus with the United States, which is far, far more deleterious in their world than even China. Because they're looking at Ireland and they're saying, how can a little country like Ireland have a 31 billion trade surplus with us? There's only 5 million of them there. And okay. So what we are, we're in this very, very exposed position.
So to finish up then, and as briefly as you can, if you would, even though it's a big question, how do you see all this playing out short term first and then medium? How is this going to change our lives in the next decade?
Next decade, we're going to have to reassess our relationship with Europe and America, try and continue to play them off each other. But my sense is that we are in for specific tariffs, which will identify us explicitly. And the Americans will try to negotiate with us, not with the EU as a bloc. And we better hope. And I think it's only hope because we are not rule makers, Brendan. We are rule takers. Small countries are rule takers. We will just hope that the EU negotiates with our interest at heart after the Apple tax decision. I'm not so sure about that.
Okay. Is there anything we can do ourselves? Like, will this big diplomatic push around St. Patrick's Day, things like that, help?
I think it's kind of window dressing. I think we're appealing to a sort of an Irish America. We're hoping that the electoral heft of Irish America might help us. We're hoping that Irish Americans in corporate America might feel proximate to us or culturally attached to us. It's really soft. And the problem is we have soft tools in a world now of hard power.
Yeah.
And that's not where you want to be.
Speaking of hard power, David, just briefly, I see Zelensky in the last hour has called for a European army. You did mention the phrase earlier. A, do you agree? And B, is that where it's going?
There's no doubt there's going to be a European army. There is no doubt in my mind that in the next 5 years there will be a European army. And that would pose a significant question for Ireland. The idea that we can have an a la carte relationship with the European Union, as we've had, you know, we take that little bit and we don't like that little bit and we'll take that little bit. That's all over.
Okay. David McWilliams, economist and author of Money. I have a feeling we are going to remember this week in years to come, and I have a feeling I'll remember this conversation. Thank you very much, David.